Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And it's the Titter Pigs, the RPG podcast. Am I getting paid for this one?
Alright, listeners, welcome back. This is episode 24 of Titter Pigs. Scott, we're 24 episodes in and no FCC complaints have reached me yet. We must be doing okay.
We definitely are. And, you know, to be fair, this podcast is a lot cheaper than 24 eggs right now. So definitely keep listening and get your money's worth out of this one. So, we are back with another interview. Keith and I got tired of talking to each other. So we decided to have more and more people on here to share the mic time. And so we have two very interesting gentlemen on here. And before I announce them, you will probably lead in with the most important question that is burning down the walls of anybody who knows who you two are. How do you pronounce your game, Pele and Johan from Stockholm Cartel? And it's Mork Borg? Bud from Bud RPG's review says it's Merk Borg. Is that how you pronounce it? So please help.
It's you can pronounce it in a lot of different ways. Right. So we've learned the last couple of years. But in Swedish, I think it's intended to sound Merk Borg.
Okay.
But that's apparently pretty difficult to say because not all languages have those sounds. But Merk Borg is totally fine.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. So the podcast is over. We're done. We've pronounced it correctly. Thank you for coming. That's great. And for, I don't know how Keith is, but you know, for the standard Southern California person, such as myself, I cannot roll my R's. So even if I wanted to, it would sound worse than trying. So I will just call it Mork Borg from this point on, if that's okay. But welcome. Welcome, both of you. Thank you so much for taking up your precious time to come talk with us on our itty bitty podcast. We have several things that, you know, both Keith and I are curious about. We have questions from listeners. It's unfortunate that, my son is still in school or he would be hovering in the background. We will cover that a little bit later. But yes, so thank you and welcome.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah,
thanks a lot.
Well, Keith, how do we usually start this podcast?
Drinking beer? No. No, that's usually me while we're on the air. Usually we ask, our guests from the first time they're on the show, what has been your introduction into role-playing games? What was your gateway drug, as it were, into the gaming scene? That's kind of the next burning question. How did you guys, hit the ground running?
I usually start because okay. I'm the oldest one.
Oh, okay.
Wow. I know the feeling.
Calling himself out.
I'm Pelle Nilsson. I'm the writer of, for example, Merk Borg. Mm-hmm. I got into role-playing games maybe 1985 or something like that, 84, mm-hmm. 85. And that was a golden age for role-playing games back yes. in Sweden then, the first golden age. Now we're in the second golden age, they say. I started out with Drakar och Demoner, the game that is known as Dragonbane nowadays, mm-hmm. from Free League that's coming up. And also I played a lot of Mutant. That's also very quite famous nowadays again. Mm-hmm. It was the two big games back then, and I started to play. Yeah.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. So when you say Mutant, do you mean is that what would evolve into Mutant Year Zero, or is that something different?
That's the same game. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Interesting. So and then of course Dragonbane being, you know, one of the, you know, the hot Kickstarters that's going to be coming out soon. That I, you know, ran a playtest of that with and very, very much enjoyed it. And definitely looking forward to that. Just another question regarding that. So as far as the introduction to games, you know, were the games something that was readily available there, or was this something that you would have to hunt down? You know, did your parents, you know, provide it to you for a Christmas gift? Did you pull on their, you know, their coats or jackets, begging and screaming and throwing a fit until they would buy it for you? Because it's different all around the world, you know, how they initially are presented to the public and how people come upon them.
It was quite easy back then to get hold of, especially the Swedish games. Mm-hmm. You could buy them at toy stores. So it was very easy to get hold of, you know, the biggest games. Like
and that all that
two
all
I mentioned
changed
in a couple of hours.
Eventually.
A couple of more. It was very easy.
Right.
So I think I got Drakar and Demoner, the Dragonbane game from my grandmother back in 1985. And
during the first Golden Age, as you mentioned, I think that all stopped in a way with, I'm not sure if Cult, that game, ended it, but it certainly ended you finding games in toy stores. So that was when that's actually true. It's like when they
really?
The stores realized, like, hang on, not all these games are for, you know, for children. So maybe we should, you know, instead of taking out the ones that were a bit more like horror themed, they just removed all of them, basically. And that was that.
Yeah, so that sucks.
That.
Yeah. The cult game was released 1992, I think.
Too right. Yeah.
And then it was some, we also had not as big as in the US, I guess, but we had some satanic panic going on.
Yeah,
so
one.
They removed all the role playing games from the toy stores and so on.
Yeah. But, you know, in regards to like the first edition of Cult, that's funny because, you know, obviously the American Satanic Panic here, you know, happened because parents didn't have the concept of, oh, they're just playing with dwarves and elves and fairy folk and having a good time. Yeah. Whereas Cult, not actually, you know, saying that any satanic panic is worth it, but that had a bit of, you know, had a bit of bones to it. There was a bit of a reason where it's like, oh, wow. This,
yeah, I mean, it's definitely like a mature game. Like it's not for children in any capacity. But
no, not at all.
I think they were a bit ahead of their time in a lot of ways because they explored really, really dark themes in tabletop role playing games that you didn't really do back then. And that had consequences for them.
Yes. Oh,
Johan, since admittedly, you're younger. Did you get your start in gaming before Cult, or was that about the time where you got your start in gaming?
It was. Let's see. No, I was 11 years old, I think, when I first started, and so this was a bit after Cult was released because I'm very, very young, and I think the first game that I played was also Mutant, actually.
Okay.
It's post-apocalyptic game that later evolved into Year Zero and Mutant Chronicles and all that stuff. So that was the first game I played. And then some Drakar Demoner, as Pelle mentioned. And then we got into Cult and like Call of Cthulhu and the more sort of horror things. And I dabbled with, like, we played a lot of like freeform stuff. So things that would, I think, now be considered like indie games, you know, or more like rules, like games with no rules at all. We were just made shit up. And it wasn't until, I don't know, a couple of years ago that I first like explored what Dungeons & Dragons was. Because like at the time, there was like in the group of friends that we were in, there was this idea that Dungeons & Dragons was this American game that was a bit like worse, like lesser than our really pretentious shit. But, you know, like the games that we played, because it had levels and it was a bit more like a video game in a way. And so I wanted to try it once I got a bit older. I wanted to see what this game was about. And then I realized that it's actually pretty fun. So,
Oh
yeah. That's how I got into the OSR, for example, afterwards. So,
Oh, I mean, okay. you know, Yeah, I mean, independent creators being pretentious, never heard of that situation before.
It's an old tale, yeah.
So, I mean, just a quick question before we move on. There's a very popular game, and I'm going to totally forget it, but there was like the German version of Dungeons & Dragons that's been popular for years and years.
That Black Eye, yeah?
Dark Eye,
yeah.
Dark Eye,
yeah,
this one.
Yeah. Yes, that's it. Was that another one that would have crossed your path during that time, or was that still just separate from the other games that you were playing?
Completely unknown.
Really?
For me, at least. And I think it was completely unknown in Sweden.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. I only learned about it when I went to Germany, like when I was older, and I saw that they had a game. So, like, I think the different European countries are very isolated in their own scenes. So...
Yes.
Which is fascinating to know, because like then there are so many unknown games not far away, like in different countries' scenes. So I think
Spanish have a very big RPG scene, and the French. Yeah.
Brazil. Yeah.
And I'm always like very curious about those. Like I would like to know more about how they started out and like what preferences and what, you know, settings they had. So yeah, a little sidetrack, but.
Oh, yeah. No, we get sidetracked all the time, so you know, have no fear. The hard part is getting back on topic. So
let's get back on topic.
All right. Shit. Go on, Keith.
I'm going to be the taskmaster tonight, I see. All right, so let's talk about Morkborg, right? That's why we asked you guys to come onto the show. What were some of your early influences in creating Morkborg, coming together as a team and really putting your heads together and creating this wonderful game that has, I mean, for God's sakes, it's taken the world by storm. For good or bad, it's taken the world by storm.
Yeah. And me and Johan had done a project before Morkborg that was a horror game. So far, only published in Swedish, but we're considering to translate that game later on. But I was at conventions in Sweden, and so I was very inspired by the OSR scene. I had no idea about, you know, Dungeons and Dragons 5e. I hadn't read it back, actually. Mm-hmm. And so I was inspired by, you know, rules light games. And it, for me, it was important, since I wanted to bring the game to conventions, to, you know, you should be able to create a character in 1 minute and start playing in 10 minutes or something like that. So that was a design goal. So we started to talk about making this game after that first horror game. It was more like a scene idea first, you know.
Right.
Do whatever we wanted and maybe print it some few scenes. It was not meant to be what it became, this monster or whatever you can call it. So that's how it started. It was only paper first, like the basic rules, and then I added some classes, and Johan started to make some illustrations, and then it you know, went back and forth like that for a while, and we reached out to Free League Publishing, and Johan had been working with them before, so he had some connection, and after a while, they accepted to make a book out of this together with us. And when we decided to make a Kickstarter, we started to evolve a bit more. And, you know, I did the setting quite late in the process. But it was an iterative process. I was writing something and Johan was making an illustration. And I got inspired and I wrote some more. And then it went back and forth. It was quite easy, actually, that process. We were really inspired, and it didn't take too much time. I think we did everything in 6 or 8 months or something like that.
Yeah, like the entire thing.
Yeah.
I think we were, I've been listening to like podcasts about the state of flow, you know, when you get into the flow, and that this was definitely one of those, like both you and me got, like you said, like inspired, and we just ended up, we came into this state where we just made stuff and it came naturally in a way, and the things that we made inspired us to do more, and I don't think we ever felt any like pressure for it to become anything except what we felt like doing at the time. So it was really just a fun, fulfilling, creative thing to do. And like, we had no expectations or no like aim for it to be, you know, big or marketable or profitable or anything. It was just for fun, like whatever we wanted to do. And all the like success afterwards has been just a nice bonus effect. And it's grown out of fucking control, let me tell you. Like the whole community and the thing. Yeah, yeah, no.
Oh, we have questions.
This was not what we wanted. That.
The only pressure I felt was that I wanted to make it as perfect as it could be. I didn't want any, you know, spelling errors or mistakes. That was the only pressure I felt.
Right.
Yeah.
It's amazing because, and I forget, like after the Kickstarter came out, you know, it exploded. And it became, you know, obviously impossible to get a copy of it for a period of time. I mean, the retailer sold it out. And I think I made some sort of comment, and I forget it was either you, Pele, or Johan, who sent me a direct message and say, hey, I've got a copy next to me. Just pay, you know, if you just want to pay for it, I'll ship it to you. I'm just like, what? This, you would never have gotten something like that from most creators, I would say. I'm not saying all of them, but I mean, it was quite a bit of a shock. Of just, you know, not, really. not here's a link to something where you can go get it. It's just like, I got it here and I'll send it to you. But going back to the evolution of Morkborg, when it arrived, it included the, you know, the reprint of the original Morkborg pamphlet that you guys had. And if you, you know, for the listeners, if you don't have a copy of this, you know, to see the, you know, where it started and where it ended up, it's just the path in between is just amazing. It's mind blowing because there's very little, I mean, other than, you know, the basic rules between that and what Morkborg evolved to. And the idea that, you know, all that work that both of you did, that not only was it just, you know, that it comes so easily for you because not because it, you know, anything specific other than you just were enjoying doing it and there was no pressure. And I know that there's a lot of creators out there, you know, authors and artists and whatnot, who wish that, you know, that they would have that moment. And some people have it, some people don't. But it is good to hear that something like that still occurs. And I think it really shows. It really shows in the book, of, you know, because there's no apologies in it whatsoever. This is your creation. If you like it, you know, great. If you don't like it, you know, fuck off.
There's other games for you.
There's other games. And even then it's like, you know what? I'm tired of listening to you complain. Here's a black and white version. So can you please shut up? So yeah, I mean, that's fantastic.
We basically made it for us. Like, that's the thing. And apparently some other people also liked it, but it was only ever for us and the group of people like, around us and the people we play with. So I think that's maybe, I don't know, a lesson or like a tip to like, don't think too much about, I mean, it's not the most common tip to like, don't think about your audience, but like, don't make it first and foremost for you. I think like, make something that you enjoy and then others will enjoy too, hopefully.
Right.
Or they'll hate it, but you know, that's, it's better to be loved and hated than to be just meh by everyone.
Yeah.
I think.
Oh, absolutely.
Speaking of love and hate, right? How do you guys deal with the like the negative comments, right? Everybody loves to get like positive feedback, right? I love your game. I love your game. But how do you guys deal with the, you know, it's like art trash or this game sucks.
I can't read it. Yeah.
I have seen tons of it. but I've also seen equally as much and 10 times more positive rave reviews about your stuff. So,
I mean, it is to be expected when you do something as like experimental as this, you know,
we call it art punk.
Will like it.
It's cool.
Yeah. And I mean, not everyone will like it. Some people will actually hate it. And
right.
I think that's fine. We very rarely take up any like fight or like we very rarely argue with anyone. Like everyone is entitled to their opinion about it. Like if you hate it, that's fine. Like go ahead. You still talk about it and like you still spread the word. And so, We've actually used a few of these negative reviews as like marketing material for the game. So there's this one. There's this one review where the guy said like, "Oh, it's so like badly designed. I just want to like set it on fire." And like that played into our hands perfectly because that's what we ask the player to do. So yeah,
right.
Thank you. And you know,
yeah,
it's fun. Yeah. We have a bit of a distance to it, I think.
I
laugh at it.
I do enjoy some of the comments that you know on the social media that is seen. I mean, obviously, you know, like you said, you don't get into it, but a lot of these, you know, one-line quips or things that pop up every once in a while and just delight the crap out of me. And I'm usually laughing in tears when I've seen them. I mean, that the most recent one where, you know, someone was, you know, if you think Morkborg is one of the pinnacles of RPGs, you know, you should, you know, shoot yourself or, you know, burn your.
That was nasty. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. And then your guys' response was hell yeah. And then the newly created that very day, the Pirate Borg account chimed in. They're like, ooh, do Pirate Borg next. And it was just hilarious to kind of, you know, just, you know, kill them with kindness, so to speak, not necessarily kindness, but you're just not, you're showing that you're not letting them get to you. And it just kind of adds to the charm.
I just think, hell yeah, you should have an opinion about this. That's nice. Right. We just love that people are passionate about it. So
right. I love the game. I love the book. I can't visually read some of it because of the fonts used and, you know,
me neither,
that's
man.
Okay.
I mean,
but why yellow?
Go ahead, Keith.
Why yellow?
Why yellow?
Why yellow?
Look at your bookshelf. How many yellow books do you have?
Two now.
Yeah, exactly. Like they stick out from the shelf. They stick out like these are loud.
I mean, I know where my Morkborg stuff is.
Exactly. So that's
I know where
the
they
reason.
Are. They're
there's your
in
answer.
A box with my other digest books. But yes, they do stand out. Yeah. So okay, fine. Yeah. Fair enough. You win.
So Johan, you have a background in design and art. Is so you know.
Yeah, I do. I'm like a traditionally schooled graphic designer. So
okay.
This is just like with Pelle, this is my side gig, just a hobby thing. So right. Mm-hmm. In my daytime, I make way more boring designs.
I'm sorry to hear that. That's,
yeah, no, it's fun. I really enjoy. I enjoy making different styles. And so,
right.
But this is my chance to like draw demons and skulls and shit. So
nice.
I tend to do that.
But it shows. I mean, you know, between the merging of the writing style that evokes that world Pele has created, and you know, and the design that you've added to it, it just merges. You know, and we're here fanboying out a little bit because obviously we're fans of it. So you know, so take it. For me, you know, a lot of people, you know, the different formats and everything, you know, of the words and the different fonts and everything. And I brought this up before in other podcasts and discussions, but, you know, one of the biggest hindrances for a lot of the RPG books out there is for those who are dyslexic, you know, who just, you know, you can throw down a normally formatted, you know, book. And it's going to take me forever to read it because just, you know, reading line after line after line, everything just kind of glazes over and you got to go over it again. Whereas, you know, with books kind of like Morkborg, who take that artistic approach, appeals more to way, you know, my brain kind of goes when it goes to reading and the whole, you know, twisting and curving and different aspects of it. Now, it's not all of it's legible, but still a lot of that different format and the little chunks and whatnot. Makes it a lot easier digestible than someone slamming down a gigantic book with just, you know, bricks of paragraphs and paragraphs of pictures, you know, interspersed between them. And I think that's maybe one of the reasons why a lot of people out there enjoy it, because the rules light aspect, of course, but, you know, that non-traditional format does make it more easily digestible and easy to remember, you know, and then when it's all said and done, of course, at the end, it's like, you know, we've encapsulated it all in two pages here for you. Yeah. You know, if you couldn't get through all that, you know, here it is again for, you know, to make it, you know, a little bit easier to reference because it's easier to read, but it's a pain in the butt to reference afterwards. I, for one, enjoy that format. I know that's, you know, why my son and his friends really enjoy the format, and on top of other many, many more reasons. But he's kind of like me, you know, if he's forced to sit down and read something in length, it just kind of zooms in the background, but he can, you know, go through a book like Morkborg or something in similar format, just like that, because it breaks it up. And so his brain can kind of take a rest in between. So I'm sure that wasn't, maybe that wasn't a conscious effort, but it is a plus. It definitely is a plus for a lot of people who.
Effort in that way, but I've heard this before, and I've heard the exact opposite as well, which is fascinating. Like,
right.
This book is different from a lot of other books, makes it either way easier or way harder for people who usually can't read other books to read. So, and I'm exactly the same. Like, I can't very much read a traditional like novel or an RPG book because I zone out and it all mixes together. But these kinds of designs, if done well, really, you know, works with me. So I think, The different styles and the different artworks and everything, they sort of work like milestones, or yeah, that's the word, the milestones when you read. So like you know, oh, when you look for the health rules, you find the page with a heart on. So if right. all pages sort of look the same, it's harder to like visually find your way. You have to read to find your way, or right. use the page number as references. So.
Yeah, and all the rules for that thing you're looking for. Mm-hmm. That was also a design goal, was supposed to be on one spread.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, so you didn't have to flip back and forth to find the thing you wanted to read about. And
It's definitely a plus. I mean,
absolutely.
As we all know in role-playing games, a lot of the biggest issues is, the layout of the rules in the book. You know, it's like, oh, yeah. God, how many books do people own that just have, you know, little bits of tape or whatever, you know, notating every single freaking page because the index is horrible and you just can't open it up. There's no question about where the, where the weapons and, you know, their damage, dies are in Morkborg because of that. That picture.
You'll find them quickly.
Smacks exactly. your face.
Yeah. And there's four pages for 12 weapons, which a lot of people also hate, but also because you have all the rules on one page at the back of the book. So like, really, you're not supposed to have to reference the book when you're playing. You're just supposed to have the last spread open and that's it. Like, you shouldn't touch the book at the table. That should, you should read that in your spare time, like when you sit on the couch or whatever. You shouldn't flip in the book when you're playing. You should be talking and playing with your friends, like not have to sit there and read. So that's definitely a design goal as well.
No, that's brilliant. I mean, I can't count how many times I run a game, whether it's online or at the table, or I'm playing in a game and people spend way too much time, myself included, digging through a role-playing game book, looking for something that should be readily easy to find. It becomes very obscure reference and hard to locate, or something that should be on just a simple two-page spread or a GM screen that is very hard to locate. And we spend more time dicking around trying to locate this thing than we do playing. And it's frustrating, but you know, you have the two-page spread at the front and the two-page spread at the back, two different purposes, obviously, but they make doing either playing or character building and world building stuff super easy. So as a player and somebody who runs the game, thank you.
Yeah. So art obviously plays a big influence, in the design of your games, and, you know, it shows in the books, it shows on the website. But another influence in it that is may not be as obvious for some is, you know, music, whether it inspires you or it's the, or you've based some of the things upon the book on. I mean, you guys have produced an RPG LP, so to speak. Let's start with this. You know, what was some of the musical influences that led to the creation of this? I mean, it's obviously people are going to go, well, there's the, you know, the Swedish death metal, but I got to assume it's not, you know, one and done. There's probably other things involved with that, but it tends to carry a lot of the game with it.
I think both of us were maybe more inspired by music than other games, at least me. So it's more like a music game for me than anything else. Mm-hmm. I was inspired by lots of different kind of music, but mostly old doom metal from England, like Cathedral, and also Norwegian black metal. Mm-hmm. Those bands are in the beginning of the book. We have some a list of bands that inspired us. So they are mentioned there. But I also listened to classical music. And when I was writing the book as well, that was especially when I did the setting.
It is a very musical project. And we sometimes talk about the process and how we work as if we were a band and we're, you know, releasing instead of books, it's like albums and we jam together. It's very like musical project.
Right.
And music plays a big role, like not only for the inspiration, but also like there's a lot of references we have in, I think it's in either, not in Heretic, it's in Ferretory, the scene. There's a list of magical items and they're all taken from, like the names of them are song titles from different like metal albums.
Mm-hmm.
And there's tons of little bits and pieces referenced throughout the things we do. Plus the LP, which is very obviously a musical project.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have guessed.
Yeah. The only other person I know who's done that is there's a gentleman who goes by the name of Levi Combs, who does stuff for the OSR, and in his book Magic and Shit, a lot of the magical items and also spells, whatnot, either reference or carry, you know, album titles from various metal bands and whatnot. So it's sometimes it shows. I mean, but it is that kind of cool thing when you're going through these games and, you know, they wear their influence on the sleeve and make these references. And it's like that little Easter egg of like, you know, it's like,
if you know, you know, exactly.
Yeah. It's like the night I fell asleep reading Morkborg and I put it on my dresser and I woke up and it was still dark. And I'm like, what is that? Oh shit. It's the book. I'm
like, glows in the dark,
it's glowing. And I'm waking my wife up. The book's glowing. She's like, God, leave me alone.
Yeah, that was a fun thing that I'm not sure. I think it was the printing house who said that, oh, we can also make like fluorescent ink. Like, you can do what? Like, yeah, hell yeah, let's do it. So, yeah, we went a bit wild with all the int effects, but that's fun.
There's this culmination of influences that show. And, you know, some pop out at you, some you discover and find. And, you know, and some, you know, maybe a cultural musical reference only a few people get, but it does lead to the discovery of that. I mean, I'll be the first to admit, like, you know, when my son and his friends got into Morkborg, when they started running it, soon they were playing, the various, you know, doom metal bands and things that they've saw in your book in the background while they're running it. And, you know, so their musical appreciation has, you know, spread out from there. I'm the farthest thing from a you know, musical prude. I mean, I want my children to listen to anything and everything.
But it is one of those things
where it's just like, you know, I'm just sitting, you know, it's all quiet in the house, and all of a sudden you hear the intro to something. You're like, okay, they're playing Morkborg.
Yeah, I love to hear it.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's such a good thing because, like, in the Discord, we have the Morkborg Discord, which you're all, of course, welcome to join, everyone who's mm-hmm. listening. There's this, like, music channel where everyone posts their, like, musical tips and albums and stuff that they like. And I've gotten some really good inspirations and good, like, suggestions there. So it's widened my musical taste as well, this project, so.
Awesome.
Glad it does that to more people.
I'll have to check that out because I'm always looking for new music to listen to, like when I go to the gym or at work.
Yeah.
Trying to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's music for everything.
Definitely. That's what I call going to work, is working.
Yeah. All right. Steer the ship, Keith.
Or when I'm steering the ship and reading other things at work. Speaking of reading other things at work that I don't ever do. You guys have your third-party license, right? Which I think is fantastic. It's created some very interesting derivative works. One of the ones that I've had a real good time with is Pirateborg, right? I'm a huge pirate fan, and I've loved reading that game and running that game. How have you guys received yourselves the third-party license, right? Have you guys found it to be a boon or a bane to the Morkborg family?
Definitely a boon. I mean, without it, before we had it, and the reason we even opened it up, because we had this Morkborg cult thing. It was this
You're right.
concept where people sent us stuff and we curated it, laid it out, and it eventually became the zines and free content on the website. But that was just too much stuff for us to do. So we opened it up completely. And I think by then we sort of realized how big this creative force is that wanted to make shit for this game. And not only like classes and adventures for Mercury, but also like their own games for it. And I think the community has expanded this thing into something way bigger than we could have done, because we don't have, it's only two people of us, or there's like a handful of people in Stockholm Cartel. So I think it's been really great for the like Mercury expanded universe to grow,
yeah. I think it's like, go ahead.
And there's so many great games, and some of them are serious, some of them are just based on puns, which we love. And there's people are very imaginative. They make shit. Love it.
Yeah, it's more than 1500 items.
Yeah,
or something like that. So it's quite a lot. The only bane I can think of is that every time I come up with a great idea, someone has already done it.
Yeah,
so it's impossible to write something new.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was wondering, like, if that was an inherent risk with having that third party license for your own creative processes. So I can see where it is a risk then.
Yeah, it's quite a nice risk, and it also releases a lot of stress from us as well, because we are putting out some small thing every now and then, but we don't feel the pressure that we must come up with something new, because there's so much stuff already. So that's a dream come true, actually. I think that was a purpose for us when we did the game, or a dream. We didn't think about it too much, but it was, I'm very happy about it.
It's like a self-playing piano by this point. Yeah. Like you said, we created a monster that is now walking on its own legs, and like we can't control it, and maybe we shouldn't, it's in the hands of others now, and we still do make our stuff, but we're creators amongst other creators now in this Mercury doomed world.
The puns will eventually run dry, but not at the moment.
I don't think so. There's an endless supply of puns.
I mean, to be fair, we just put an umlaut on anything and then it becomes more Borg related. Yeah. So, the only other group that I can think of that kind of compares to that, with that type of rabid supportive fan base, that fan base is just kind of cranking out, quality material, would be like the Mothership crew. Yeah. They kind of have the same, type of fans and the same license, where it's just, whereas there's no shortage of yellow material, there's no shortage of neon purple and red for the Mothership people.
No, they're really impressive, and I think Mothership is an awesome game, and can't wait for the big box edition to come out on Kickstarter. So
a lot of people are waiting for that. So
yeah, come on, Sean.
Speaking of can't wait, for something in a box, you had mentioned that you are bringing out small things here or there, and you're gonna, I don't know the exact timeline, but there is the icons stuff, and that is a Stockholm Cartel Mercborg exclusive. That's not a third party project, correct?
Yeah. It's me and Johan.
Yeah,
that's already out, if I recall.
I think
correctly.
It's released now. Yeah, okay. Free League released it a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
Yeah, finally. That's that thing is cursed. Let me tell you that.
Yeah. Really,
that's really cursed in real life. It's
so what? Well, then divulge. What?
Yeah. If you pitch it to listeners. Tell listeners about what's icons.
What
I've already read it. So
I mean, you want me to go, Pelle? Or
You can go.
So essentially, what icon is? It's a mystery box. We say so. It's a kind of weird product. It's a typical Pelle product, I think, because it's this in-world item, in a way. It's not exactly specified what it is, if it's a box or a relic or a book or a scroll or whatever, but it's something that you can use to commune with four folk gods, like forgotten, almost forgotten folk gods that were worshipped before the now big religion with the two-headed basilisks and everything came right. into power. And you can commune with these gods and you can summon them or the help of them at least. But if you mess up, they will punish you and maybe kill you or your friends. And you can like increase or you can make your odds better by sacrificing willing people to this thing or chopping off your own limbs to sacrifice, you know, mm-hmm. and that will make your chances better. And so that's basically what it is. Like physically, it's a small box, A6, so it's very tiny. It's like half the size of the Merkbor book. And mm-hmm. it's inside are four small black booklets that are identical to each other. So you basically, when you use it, you pick one of these tracts, we call them. So you pick one of these booklets, mm-hmm. and that's the god that you're communing with now. And you roll the die and you see how well it goes. So, and that's it. So like, and we've had so many problems in the production of this thing. So it's,
oh no.
Yeah, no, it's been a ride for different reasons. Yeah.
So did you fall under the typical response when you announce we're going to make a box set and then you just hear the collective groan of a lot of creators go, oh, was it that kind of bumpy road or other things?
It was a lot of things. So COVID was definitely a thing because right. of like the shipping and everything. This was an add-on to the Merkbor called Heretic yeah, right. Kickstarter. I think the main thing was that our lovely printing house that we used that make all these beautiful books, mm-hmm. they couldn't really see why anyone would want four identical black booklets. So they thought this must be a mistake. The cover must be flipped. So they, without consulting us, flipped the covers so that the inside of the covers were on the outside of them. You know, printed yeah. it, produced them, all of them, two languages, Swedish and English, put them all in boxes, shipped them out. Oh, and because of COVID, they were sitting in a warehouse and no one could come there and check them out before it was time to like send it to everyone. So by the time we saw it, it was too late for us to complain. So we just had to eat the cost of reprinting and reshipping to everyone.
Yeah,
not funny, but very thematically appropriate, at least for this cursed book or box. But I think even while we were sending people new copies, for some reason, I think it was because of the shipping company, they still received faulty copies like two times in a row or three times in a row. It was a clusterfuck actually. But I think now at least everyone has the right copies and yeah, it's stores and it's beautiful.
It's a handful of backers that still haven't got the right one, but yeah.
But they actually received the wrong ones?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then that's obviously going on someone's shelf. That'll be a collector's item a few years from now. You'll see it on eBay and all that nonsense. Yeah.
People are already selling them as misprint collector items. I'm already seeing them.
Oh, it's an easy fix as well, because you just have to remove the staplers and flip the cover and put them back together again. So like people are doing that, but we feel a responsibility of giving the people you know, what they paid for. So we have to make sure that they get it. Despite all of that, it's a cool thing.
Okay.
Well, Keith, you got yours. So,
I got it in digital.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I've read it digital. I mean, I like the concept. I mean, me personally, because I do reviews on the Rolling Boxcars blog. So, I think for a collector, I think it's, you know, in the Merkborg aficionado, I think it's something to have. I think somebody like me that's running it at the table, I don't know that I want my players running around with these icons to long forgotten folk gods and all this crazy ass power, like being potentially unleashed in the world. I don't know.
But you do you, but I think that overpowered magic items are extremely fun to, you know, put in your hands and into the hands of the players.
It strikes me
chaos.
I might have to go back and just re-add like one line to my review, which has not yet published, but it strikes me as the Merkborg version of the deck of many things in a way.
In a way, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
See,
yeah.
That's actually true.
See, what may change your mind, Keith, is as someone who's run Merkborg for a group of teens many, many times,
Yeah,
that's exactly what they want.
I know.
So
I think one interesting aspect about this thing is so as well is that when not to try to like sway your review because that's not what we're trying to do here, but the fact that you can increase the odds of this succeeding by sacrificing people and they have to want to be sacrificed. So
I did like that.
It's a quite dark thing, but like your players kind of have to become these cult leaders that will recruit people and try to persuade them that they should die for the cause of this magic item to function. Like it creates a weird situations and like social dynamics here.
I think one thing that gets lost in the, because I only have the PDF, I don't have the physical box, right? I think one thing that gets lost in the digital version is the aspect that it's four separate booklets.
Yeah.
Because it's just one running PDF that just transitions from one to the next and so on. And it just gets lost that it's four separate booklets. I didn't realize that until I saw somebody have an open box copy and I saw a photograph.
It's a very physical product. You have to sort of lay them out as you would like a tarot deck or something and then pick one.
And that does get lost.
Experimentation with form as well. Like, this could have been just four tables that you roll on, but we wanted it to obviously make the most complicated way of possible of making
four tables. You did. Kudos for that.
Well, that's part of it. It's the aesthetic. I mean, and that's kind of what's, you know, with this, the addition of Cyborg and, you know, people are coming to, you know, expect a certain type of, material appeal on top of, you know, just the actual what's inside the books and the rules themselves. It makes sense. And, you know, just there's people out there who would, if you would have just done tables, they probably would have went, where's the good stuff? Again, I'm repeating myself, but it just kind of goes hand in hand.
We're getting to about the hour point. I know it's getting late for you guys in Sweden. Do you got time for a couple listener questions?
I got time,
of course. Sure.
Yeah, of course.
Fantastic.
No.
All right. So one of our dedicated listeners and longtime supporter of my blog has two questions. She's a fanatic for Morkborg and Cyborg. She loves your black and white version of Morkborg, and she asked if you guys would be putting out a black and white version of Cyborg.
We haven't announced anything yet, but it's not impossible that we do that someday. We'll see.
Okay. She loves it, but like she's having a hard time reading it. So she asked if there was something in the works and that see what the future holds.
We'll see what the future holds. Definitely. Okay. So it took a while for us to make the Bare Bones edition of Morkborg. So we haven't done one for Cyborg yet.
Okay. That's fair. And her other question is she's a huge solo gamer or GMless gamer. And with them, with that type of game interface being uber popular today, there are three third-party published solo interfaces for Morkborg right now. Is there any plans to either adopt one of those as official de facto, like Stockholm Cartel approved or as a rule set, or are you just going to let the third party publishers just kind of have their creative space?
We haven't really talked about that actually.
Okay.
I think for now we're sort of happy that there is the one. I didn't know that there were three, but that's
he informed me there were three, so
that's even better. Yeah. So but no, I think I only know of Solitary Defilement, and I've played it myself a bunch of times. I think it's great. So, I mean, maybe that's an interesting idea to do. Like we haven't talked about it at all, actually.
Okay.
It would, it's an interesting idea. Maybe expand Dark Fort or something into a board game or... you could do a lot, but we haven't actually talked about it too much.
Okay.
Well, we've got another listener question here. There was one someone already asked, but we covered that. But we have another one here from Phil McClory And he kind of just, you know, basically just went, he's curious about, you know, where do you see, you know, either the game or even Stockholm Cartel going in the future? Specifically, he says, in your innovative Kickstarters, like, you know, Putrescence, Regnant, and things like that. And so, I mean, it's, I guess, in a nutshell, he's saying, what's coming next? I mean, I know you guys just came out with Icons, but, you know, and you're, you know, you've got that community to kind of lean on. But is there anything coming up in the works that you may be able to touch upon, or, you know, throw a little
spill the beans, little
teaser on?
We have very, very tight lids on our bean cans, I think.
Okay.
I'll just check my webcam then.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, there's things in the works, but nothing we can talk about, I think.
Fair enough.
Right?
No. I can come up with either.
But, I mean, we want to keep experimenting, like we did with Putrescence Regnant and Icon, and, you know, try different formats. Making another Merkborg cult scene is probably not something we do, because we've done that already. So be something else.
Maybe another game.
Maybe another game. Ooh. Who knows?
Yeah.
But there's but I mean, I think you satiated his question. I mean, that there's something. The gears are always turning.
Yeah, totally. We haven't stopped working.
Well, that's good. At least we know you haven't stopped working, and you know, there's a future to look forward to. So that's good. That is fantastic. Yeah. So I'm excited. But,
yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. I personally can't say, you know, I've got enough good things about it. But before I, you know, I've got to, you know, bring up, you know, my son and his friends one last time. Keith, do we have any other questions here?
We don't have any questions, but I do have one other good thing to say. So I do want to thank Johan for, on behalf of Scott and I, for hooking Bud up, Bud from Bud's RPG Reviews, for his birthday book that he lovingly has sat behind him on his camera. Every time he's in a Zoom call or a pub with us, it's there. And then lugging it to Gen Con for us at our request. And when I drug Bud over to the Free League booth, and then you had it and you gave it to him, and that absolutely made his entire Gen Con. So on behalf of Scott, thank you for doing that.
Right.
That's brilliant. I'm very happy that I was allowed to destroy a book for him that badly. Like, I know that he appreciates books and is a book lover. So, you know, just breaking that spine and ruining the book for him to see. That's, you know, it's priceless.
He still talks about it to this day and he loves it. And I think that is probably the most cherished book in his book collection. I mean, it sits in a place of pride behind him. So, yes.
Yeah. Oh, damn. Yeah. So
thank you.
Yeah, real quick to the listeners who aren't aware of this. So Bud turned 50, and a group of us and other, you know, people within the hobby came together and, you know, provided special birthday wishes and videos. I threw it all together and presented it to him on YouTube. If you want to check it out, I'll throw the link or whatever in there. You know, I reached out to the Merkborg Twitter and was one of the, like, the first or second ones that I did. And I reached out to several people and they're like, yeah, you know, when's it due? You know, and I think I gave it, like, you know, a 2-month head notice, you know, and then Johan said, yeah, absolutely. And I shit you not, it seemed like 2 hours later, there's this well-produced, you know, video of Johan just completely thrashing, you know, this Merkborg book with this wondrous soundtrack. And it took all the power within me to not just, you know, send that to him right away, because I didn't want to spoil it. But I sure as fuck shared it with everyone else.
Oh, like, yeah, he shared it with me and it was great. Made my
holy
day.
Holy crap. None of you are going to do anything that's good. You might as well just send in a happy birthday and just leave it at that. No, it was fantastic. But and speaking of thank you, I just another thing I just want to thank both of you for is, you know, the last Gen Con we went to, Gen Con 2022, went there with my family and my son, who is also a gamer, and he is a rabid fan of Merkborg. And he, you know, he discovered it through me. I didn't push it on him. It just, you know, one of those things, would you like to try out Merkborg? And after, it was just like addicted. And one of the highlights was he found out that, you know, that you were going to be there at the Free League booth, and he wanted to get, you know, a signature. And unfortunately, we passed by the Free League booth. You both were busy. You know, you're bouncing all over the place, and the booth itself was busy. And every time we went, you know, unfortunately, you weren't there. And I just, you know, on a whim, I mean, we follow each other on Twitter, but, you know, none of us are in any constant communication. So I'm just like, let's, you know, try to hit a Hail Mary here. And I said, send out a message. And within like a few seconds, you're like, absolutely. We'll be back at this booth at this specific time, bring him over and we will take care of it. And, you know, then thankful and showed up there, you know, he bought a brand new copy. You signed it. I do feel a little bad though, because Pele, I know that he, you know, he had Johan sign it, and you were there at the booth, and then we were kind of walking away. I'm like, did you get both of them to sign it? He looked back and went, oh, and he's 15, and he's just like, okay. Oh. And then he kept going because, oh, you know, he felt bad. He didn't want to come back and go, oh yeah, can you sign it too? So apologies for that if that got picked up on, but no, just, you know, seeing, you know, sad Noah from that scene in Arrested Development, is every time we walk by the booth, he's just like, they're not there. And, and so, but thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to, do that for him. And they have been enjoying, I'm just, side note, just so you guys know, there's a high school here in Southern California. There's an RPG gaming group. They have like 80 kids doing this thing. And as of lately, they've taken a break from, you know, it's primarily built upon D&D 5e, but they're discovering playing other games. And as of recently, they are running Morkborg there. Several of the kids are. There's several tables running it. They're making their own games with it. They're mashing rules together with it. My son wrote some weird, but some game where he's like, I'm going to take Morkborg and I'm going to mash it with 3.5 because he just discovered D&D 3.5. And I'm like, fantastic.
Do it.
Good luck with that. And then I'm like, and if you can make sense of that, and if you can successfully merge those together, continue. So the DIY aspect of the game, you know, obviously through the cult and everything shows, but it is being picked up and utilized by, you know, the next generation of torchbearers within the hobby. And hopefully that torch will, you know, continue to carry Morkborg forward, either in its current incarnation or some other incarnation. So thank you so much for that. And I have one special request before we conclude. They won't forgive me if I don't ask, but would both of you mind just saying hello to Zane and Noah, and before we conclude?
Sure.
Okay. I mean, I know it sounds weird, but just say hi, Zane and Noah, and they will just go. They know us. So yeah. I'll be, so I got 1, 2, 3.
Hi, Zane and Noah.
Hi, Zane and Noah.
Right. Good luck with everything. It's never gonna work out. You know, just run.
Oh, that's awesome.
All right, I will re-edit that to sound better. So no, just kidding. Yeah. No, thank you. I appreciate it. So.
Oh my god!
Great. Keith, do we have anything else?
No, we do not have anything else other than our usual exit stuff.
Okay.
So, gentlemen, thank you for spending your evening with us for the last hour. It's been a real pleasure. I am still further fascinated with Morkborg and Cyborg, and I still have a new appreciation for icons. Again,
I'll smack him after physical. We're done. Yeah,
no, he won't smack me. Again, thank you for spending the time with us. This has been enlightening. I look forward to seeing what you guys do in the future with the product line or even new stuff. You guys keep producing good stuff. So I'm excited.
Yes.
Thanks a lot for having us here. It's been really, really fun. And
excellent.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll see each other next Gen Con if you're going as well. Or who knows?
Oh,
some other con.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, if anything comes out again, we would love to have you, you know, both back on, you know, and anyone else, you know, within your crew at Stockholm Cartel. I mean, it's a, you know, unified force producing these games. So and thank you again for doing that. So is there obviously those who are listening know where they can find you. So we will put that in the description just in case. Anything else you either one of you would like to reference before we sign off?
Speaking of cons, we're doing a bunch of cons this year. Some of them, most of them are in Sweden, but we're going to Gen Con and we're going to UK Games Expo. And that's only this first half year. So if you are going to any of these cons, like come look for us. We'll bring a lot of stuff. A lot of things that we haven't really found a way to distribute internationally yet that will be somewhat con exclusive until we figure that out. So come look for us.
Yeah, I'll post a link to that in the description too, because I know what it is that you're talking about. Cool. And if you meet them at the booth, get both signatures, please. gents, it has definitely been a pleasure. And for those of you, you know, who have made it to the end, thank you. Send us an email. Hit us up at titterpigspod@gmail.com. Drop into our Discord at the Rolling Boxcards Discord. And if it's still working, and if you want to leave us a voicemail on Anchor, please do, or send us a voice message on the email also. Let us know how we're doing, how you enjoyed this episode, and if there's anything we missed, if you have any other questions that we didn't ask, you'd like to know anything about, you know, Morkborg, we'll definitely pass it on. With that, I think we're done. We can go drink now. Yeah.
Put a little bow on this and ride into the sunset.